We've all done it. Stock our fridge with good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice nutrition for convenience. Keep your body and mind nourished with whole body meal shakes from Ka'Chava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But it actually tastes delicious. Try one of Ka'Chava's indulgent flavors today. Your future self will thank you. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code FITNESS for 15% off your next order. That's Ka'Chava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code FITNESS.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Serena Bellissimo, Michelle Lawler, and Olivia Fahey joined us in the studio. Only 2 minutes here and everyone's sweating like a pig. This studio is a bit hot because they're doing work on it. I don't know what work they're doing. I think they're trying to transform it into the Amazon. Anyway, good afternoon to all of you. Can you say an Irish-made wine or a wine made by an Irish?
No, she's an Irish winemaker, but not only is she an Irish winemaker, she is the best Irish winemaker there is. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, but she's a chemist from Mayo, isn't she?
Yes, and actually, oh my God, I bloody forgot the name of the chemist again. Hold on. Because I texted her to say, I'm going to be on the radio talking about your lovely wines. And she said, will you say hello to the girls? And I can't even find the message here. Curly's Total Health in Ballyhaunus are listening.
Curly's Total Health in Ballyhaunus, that's a rocking venue.
These are Roisin Curly's wines. So Roisin Curly is a trained pharmacist, works in a family business. I was open to the last 2 months when she was making vintage. She could be found there by day, winemaking by weekend.
Does that mean she flies over to...
She'll fly over a good bit, but she would also have people looking after if she was getting reports of what was going on with the wines to do certain jobs. There is a part of the job that's very labour intensive at the start, so she would have been there for 2 months to get her 2025s going. We're going to taste the 2023s today. But what is amazing about Roisin Curly is that she's only making wine 10 years whilst running her family business. Working as a pharmacist, she also passed the Master of Wine exam, which started in 1955, I think. And in that many years, how many years is that? 80 years?
It's a lot.
70. Yeah. You can go 70.
70.
Yeah. Yeah, good maths.
Okay, well done.
Only 416 people have passed it. So it is the most difficult wine qualification you can get. And this amazing woman who makes these really beautiful, skilled wines also has done that exam in the middle of the whole thing.
Yeah, and so was it kind of, was there any tradition in her family or was it just a kind of almost random choice?
What Roisin wouldn't tell you, but people who know Roisin would tell you, is that if she's going to do something, she's going to be the best at it. That is just how she operates. I believe she...
That's why it's the best pharmacy in Ballyhaunus, really.
Definitely the best pharmacy. Yeah. I believe she was national level Irish dancer, amongst other things, but she's just one of those people. If she's going to do something, she's going to be really, really good at it. Loads of skills. Irish dancing, making your medicines up and making wine.
Yeah. So she would have... Because she would then lease land of somebody and just... Is she planting a vineyard? Did she plant a vineyard from scratch or you buy them from someone?
So she what is called a micro-negotiant, okay? So she rightly... I was literally about to talk about that, so I'm so glad.
Okay, sorry.
So that was a great question. So what she does is she would rent, or not rent, but commit to buying the grapes from certain vineyards or certain rows in vineyards based on the qualification, or not, I suppose the attitude and the skill of the grape grower. So, for example, we're going to try a white and a red here today. There must be maybe 11 different wines, but she produces different ones every year based on how the grapes are. But she'll basically commit to buying a certain percentage of the grapes in a certain field. And then she actually just takes the grapes and works with the grapes. She might have some input into the working of the vines, but ultimately she's a micro-negotiant. And for example, the wines that we're going to try here, I'm going to get the numbers slightly wrong, that's how I roll. The Bourgogne Allegotti, the white, only 1,400 bottles of that were made.
Okay.
And if you think about champagne, how many bottles of wine do you think are made in champagne every year?
More than 1,400.
300 million. Okay.
Ooh. Wow.
It is a huge enterprise. And this wonderful woman is making what I can only describe as a few barrels of each wine. So, for example, if this is 1,400, the Bourgogne Allegotti, and you know when you go and you have your pint in the pub and you put your pint on the barrel? So that's basically five of those barrels. of this particular wine. They're so rare. They're so highly accoladed. They're so delicious. They're so special. They're made by an Irish woman. How much more can you love it? And they're delicious. Wait till you try them. You're going to really love
them. And do
them.
They all come to Ireland, or does she sell
no.
them?
No. So she has like some limited markets for them because they're in such small production. I would say she does have a huge following in Ireland, and people like to try and buy as many of them each year, so they'll have like a full collection so they can taste nearly what she's achieved in that year. Mm. And then they're ultimately kind of sold to Michelin star restaurants, good wine shops around the world. That's it.
Yeah.
Like it's a very, very, because it's such a small production, it really is a labour of love. Yeah, so isn't it amazing?
Okay, all right.
So I'm excited to have two.
Yeah, and there's the reds of
Fleury.
Yeah. Okay, right. Okay, is that a white Burgundy, essentially?
So, you know what, Sean, I knew you were going to grimace when you saw that label, because I know how much you kind of...
No, I had a sip and it's very nice, so...
Yeah. So it's white Burgundy, but
that's just my face is like that.
It's just the heat from the studio. And there are two grapes produced in Burgundy, and everyone thinks it's always Chardonnay, which it really is the majority of the time. And Chardonnay is Marmite. You know, you love it or you hate it. This is Allegotti. So it's one of the smaller known, the lesser known grape. I can't wait to tell you more about it.
Okay,
otherwise.
And our two movies today, Begonia, that's Yorgos
Lanthimos.
Weird.
Yeah, very, very, very weird. Like, more weird than I even would say The Lobster was. Like, that's kind of the level that we're going for. Like, over the years, I just think he's just getting weirder and weirder. And now this is kind of, we're getting back to, like, some of his, like, Greek-made films kind of thing. Yeah. That level of weird.
Okay, yeah. And The Black Phone, too.
Yes.
The much-anticipated follow-up to The Black Phone 1.
Well, The Black Phone actually was one of those kind of...
You know what I'm saying. I've never heard of it before.
Well, The Black Phone was actually one of those kind of, like, surprise hits. Like, people weren't expecting it to do much in cinemas, then it actually did very, very well. It was well received. Considering how the film ended, no one really expected us to get a part two. But when it did, you're kind of like, okay, how are they going to do this? Even one of the lead actors, Mason Thames, even told me he was as surprised as anybody else that it was getting a sequel. But it has it. And do you know what? It wasn't bad. I was actually quite surprised at the direction that they took it in, because it is quite different to the first one, but it still keeps a lot of the same kind of themes and tones that the first one did. So,
okay. Is it a spoiler to say what happened in the first one and why it seemed unlikely there'd be a second one? Everybody dies.
It is a little bit of a spoiler. Not everybody dies, but, you know, there is kind of like the main kind of evil is defeated, shall we say, and then they have found a way to bring him back.
Yeah. All right. Of course they can. Yeah, it was he stepped out of the shower. Mary Gaynor from Thomastown also passed her master's in wine many years ago. Wonder how many women from Ireland have a master's in wine. Text him once in a...
So there is another fabulous lady called Barbara who has a wine importer business called Wine Mason. And there is another fabulous one. I was going to say even more fabulous, but then I'd definitely be in trouble. Harriet Tyndall has also passed it. Lynn from O'Brien's has passed it. So there's actually, given how small a population we are, like most things us Irish do, we kind of excel at it. So.
Yeah, and is it kind of like, you know, disassembling an M16 with a blindfold on.
That
you have to kind of, you know, you're tasting wines and you have to know what street they came from.
Yeah, and I would think, how much do you really want to be a master of wine?
Yeah.
You kind of want to enjoy it as well, as in the drinking part.
Yeah, no, is there an intermediary stage where you don't have to be a master, you can just like be...
I have a diploma in wine, so that's a level 4. That took 2 years to complete. A lot of people who are into wine might think, okay, I want to do a qualification. It's the WSET. There's a fabulous gentleman called Phil Dunn who has Vinspire, if anyone wants to do any of them, who's not in the industry but wants to learn a bit more. It depends. Look, it's a drink. You got to love it.
Yeah, indeed. Right, so, Serena, the David Bowie documentary, which sounds really interesting, even if you're not a fan of David Bowie, given it's... what it's about.
Exactly. So, I mean, it feels like at the moment we are getting documentary after documentary about the icons and people who aren't so iconic in the entertainment industry. But this is going to basically look at it's called David Bowie, The Final Act. Channel 4 are making it. So I'm really excited by that because, yes, there'll be people he knows who'll be involved in it, but I think it'll be a bit more unbiased, unlike a lot of the documentaries we've seen come out. It's going to be based on it's called David Bowie, The Final Act. And he died I can't believe he died almost 10 years ago, 2016.
Mad, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's all about the album that he
Black
released.
Star.
Which dealt with death. So that's what this is going to look into
because
as well.
He was dying when he was making this.
That's got to be so... I'm not, I can't believe I'm going to admit this on air, I'm not a huge David Bowie fan. I don't even know if I'm saying his name right. Like,
yeah, I always get that. I always want to say Bowie, but that, and then people are texting in and saying, no, it's Bowie.
Yeah,
or maybe it's the other way around. I can't remember.
I don't know. So yeah. I say Bowie.
Yeah.
Okay. I think a lot of Irish I know say Bowie. But anyway,
yeah. That's wrong.
Just saying. The documentary will probably put an end to that. And if you watch, you will know how to pronounce his name. But I love that the director's come out and he said that the traditional music documentary celebrates triumph. What fascinated me most when making this film was how Bowie's final chapter wasn't actually an ending, it was a resurrection. He transformed failure into triumph, silence into revelation, and ultimately death into art. Like, that alone sells me into,
yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to this. And as I said, there's going to be involved in this is there's going to be people who worked alongside Bowie. But I also love that famous fans will come on and probably talk about how he impacted their lives and their creativeness as well. So I'm looking forward to it because it's not one of the big streamers. So
yeah,
it's going to be Channel 4. It's not going to be probably as razzle-dazzle as all of the ones we've seen, but I think it's going to be really good.
And presumably not. I wonder, do they have footage of them recording that album? They must do.
I was going to say, they have to have footage. I can't wait to see all of that stuff.
They must do. Because that was a dark album. Like, it wasn't, you know, sunshine and roses for all the obvious reasons.
Exactly. And I'd say that's what this documentary is going to be as well. Now, we don't know much more yet, but what we do know is that the people behind this are, they also did Freddie Mercury, The Final Act, and ABBA, Against the Odds. So I think this is going to be something that we're all going to want to watch.
Okay. They said when it'll be finished?
We don't know yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just watch this space. Do you know what would be lovely? And I'm just making this up now, but what would be lovely is if this was released on the 10-year anniversary of his death.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be a full circle moment.
Bowie is my musical hero, but the BBC's 5 years documentary is the ultimate music documentary and can't be bettered. So I'm going to watch this one. Well, yes, I am, says Alan. So, okay, he seems to be. Well, you never. It's the best one you've watched so far, Alan. You don't know what's going to come. Right. Michelle, go on.
Let's go.
Before you explode with enthusiasm.
No, that's how I rock, unfortunately. Yeah. So, has everyone had a taste of this?
Yes, we have. Yeah.
Cheers, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Ooh. Is that a thing you say, happy Halloween?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, bah,
yeah, well, okay.
Or
fine.
Happy Mariah's almost coming out tomorrow.
Happy Mariah defrosting day.
Yes. Mariah's gay.
Oh, sorry, as in she's, I should have worded that. She's defrosting and tomorrow she will announce that sparkly season has begun.
Oh, I see. So tomorrow Christmas starts.
That was a really quirky thing to say.
Yeah.
I'm
confused.
Yeah. It's okay, Serena. I knew what you were saying.
Right. Well, like Mariah's coming out. Like, where have they been keeping her? You know, there's like a massive fridge and the door's open.
Well,
that's probably about right.
About right.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so the wine that we are having is Roisin Curley's Bourgogne à la Gottie. And Burgundy is really famous for those really buttery, creamy Chardonnays. And this particular one, Bourgogne à la Gottie, is made from the à la Gottie grape, and only a tiny percentage of all white Burgundy comes from this grape. And 20 years ago, you wouldn't have touched it with a barge pole because it was so tart and acidic. Mm. The only way to drink à la Gottie from Burgundy was with creme de cassis in it, and it was called a cure. Do you remember when cures were a thing?
Yeah.
That's what a cure was, Anyway,
I remember being in, I won't name the supermarket, but hearing kind of two elderly ladies picking up a bottle of wine and one saying to the other, do you know what this is like? And she says, I haven't a clue. But sure, if it's horrible, we can put a bit of blackcurrant in it. Anyway.
I love it. A bit like the Guinness. Or not, I didn't say that on it. So what's happened with climate change is that à la Gottie as a grape it's one of the few grapes that has lent itself to making better wines because of climate change. And particularly in Burgundy, where they struggle with it every single year. It's always really, really hot. And so if you have Chardonnay planted on the wrong type of a slope...
So we could plant à la Gottie in the studio, probably.
Oh my God, it'd be delicious. Yeah. It's so hot here. So what has happened is we've ended up with a wine that's quite Chablis-esque in that it's so gorgeous. Serena here is licking her lips and drooling.
Yeah. I don't usually like this stuff. Like, I don't like wines like this, but this is amazing.
Yeah. So if you're thinking, okay, I don't like white Burgundy, but you want to get into it, you want to try something you like, this is a definite one to try. And I think particularly as a Roisin Curley one, if you wanted to give someone an absolutely amazing gift and know they're going to like it, because it effectively tastes very, very similar to a Chablis. And who doesn't like Chablis? except for Sean here.
Yeah.
There was a little twitch in his
eye. I know, other people in it, like sadly.
So look, it's a really, really gorgeous style of wine, produced in tiny quantities. This particular one, 1,400 bottles, like the five barrels.
Crikey, yeah.
It's so tiny and so different to everything that you're going to try. So I think there's a few reasons why it is particularly special and unique. What are you going to have if you're having a glass of this lemony, crisp, minerally? It's really mouthwatering, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I love that. And that's just acidity. And that is a perfect food wine. So if you were thinking you're going to have something with pork, something with cream, Olivia was just telling me how much mushrooms and mozzarella style. Yeah, that acidity is going to cut through the fat in those slightly richer dishes to make your food taste better and your wine taste better. So look, just something really cool. She has a few different wines that are Chardonnay. She does Beaune, a San Roman. I can't remember any of the others because I can't remember any of those. But they're really buttery and rich. And I would say that her style of winemaking is very feminine. She's got quite a light touch. They taste really elegant and really refined. And so for her whites, for me, I always find of the Chardonnay ones, the ones that are Beaune and San Roman, they're lusciously buttery and delicious. They are so gorgeous. And then she makes two from the Aligoty grape. She makes this one, which is Bourgogne Aligoty, and this is sourced from vineyards near Volnay. And then she makes one called Bouzeron, like boozy, but Bouzeron. And that's the appellation, and that's the only legal appellation in Burgundy where you can actually make the Aligoty grape. It's illegal. If you were to make, say, a regular white Burgundy and put Aligoty in it, all of a sudden your wine is illegal and you can't call it that.
Yeah.
It's very, the rules are very tightly regulated. Anyway, look, isn't it great and delicious? And well done, Roisin.
Yeah. Okay, well, and continued success to Roisin. It's fantastic. David Bowie's real name is David Jones, as somebody points out. But someone else has found, from the Monkees, Davy Jones. And Kevin says, odd enough, Bowie passed away during the inaugural Dublin Bowie Festival, which is poor timing on their part. I would have thought more than anything else. What movie would you like to do first?
Oh, let's go for Bourgogne.
Okay, Bourgogne coming up after this.
Can we have a dialogue, please?
Don't call it a dialogue. This isn't Death of a Salesman.
Okay, can we talk? Please, or are you just going
to
keep doing...
We don't need to talk.
Yes, okay.
Because I know exactly what you're going to say. You're going to say that I'm in some kind of internet-induced, auto-hypnotic feedback loop and gatekeepers and norms and all that weak, hegemonic horse shit. But that is precisely the limp-dick rhetoric that you've been instructed to counter the human insurgency with, by which you've convinced 7.5 billion people that they're not your captives.
No, didn't understand a word of that either. That is Bourgogne. So in as far as one can describe the plot.
These two gentlemen are big conspiracy theorists. They think aliens have invaded the Earth and that they're living among us and they're going to try and destroy the Earth. And they believe that this woman, who is a CEO of a big kind of tech pharmaceutical company, is one of these aliens. And so they decide to kidnap her and take her hostage in order to try and get onto her mother's ship when it eventually arrives during a lunar eclipse.
Okay, great.
was actually pretty sufficient,
that was pretty
wasn't
good,
it?
Yeah. Amazing. Why didn't he say that in the clip?
So actually that clip is kind of is showing when Jesse Plemons' character is confronting Emma Stones to be like, I know that you're an alien, this is why we're doing this, and she's just like, hang on, like, what are you talking about? Like, she has no idea what's going on. They've shaved her head for real. They actually shaved Emma Stone's head for this because they believe that that's how she contacted her mothership, is through hair. I just said that out loud. I just saw the looks at everybody's faces and I was kind of like, yep, that's the correct facial expression. So yes, that is the premise of the film. Is she an alien? Is she not? Yeah. And what is going to happen? Does she escape? How does she escape? What happens to the guys? You know, that's the premise. It's like a thriller, but a very, very, very weird one.
For one of his films, that sounds more normal than some of the others.
In fairness, yes, but there was moments in this where even I was sitting there going, okay, hang on a minute, like, where are they going with this? And you're trying to kind of like remember what had kind of just happened as well. And you enjoy it. It's definitely like experienced cinema, but you do have to sit with it for a little while, because after I came out, I was like, I actually cannot tell if I liked that or not, but I enjoyed the experience. And then once I sort of sat with it for a while, I was like, no, actually, I do think that was actually a genuinely good movie. And the performances are brilliant. Jesse Plemons, oh my God, if that guy is not nominated for something this year, I'm going to eat my hat.
Mm, Yeah, and how did Emma Stone do?
Very, very well. It's definitely a much more kind of reserved performance because, like, we've seen her in, like, the Favourite and La La Land. They were a little bit more kind of, like, extroverted. This is very kind of, like, measured and cool and calm because, like, she's this big major CEO and she's used to, like, negotiating with all of these men who are trying to, like, tell her that she's wrong. And she's like, no, this is the direction that I want to go in and this is how I'm going to get it done. And not quite, like, manipulation level, but even, like, trying to use, like, psychology with her staff to be like, oh, don't, like, just to let you know, like, if you want to leave at 5:30, then great, as long as all your work's done. Yeah. Like that kind of a thing. So like she's trying to gain like the trust of her employees, but she's also making clear like if you stay late, then that's your choice because you need to get your work done. But I'm telling you that if you did want to go at 5:30, you can.
Like that kind of thing. Terrifying. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, you can hear. And so it's all set in the US then.
All set in the US, yeah.
Is it played for laughs?
There's some moments where you do kind of have like a little chuckle, but it's definitely not like probably intentionally funny. It's just like this little like light relief because it's quite intense actually. There's very long periods where you're kind of like, oh my god, but so it does have like these little moments where you do get that like little short relief, but overall it is just a thriller. Like you are gripped to be like, I want to know what's going on. And even then there's moments where you're like, I just want to find out what happens now. Like this is going on too long. But it's actually not as long a film as you kind of feel that it is when you're experiencing it, but that's just your own impatience to want to know what happens at the end. It's not really the film's fault itself. You're just like, I just want to know now, because it's like they kind of tease you to be like, we're going to reveal it now. No, we're not. It's like you're going to have to wait another little while. And when it is revealed as to how it all kind of wraps up, you're like, nice.
All right. So it's a satisfying end.
It is.
And is it because it sounds, because some of his other films are maybe there's a little bit of sadness as well in them. Is there as much in this? Or
yeah, there is. And it's like, so Jesse Plemons' character, his mother is sick, and that's kind of where a lot of his motives have kind of come from and how this CEO has kind of come to his attention. And when they're kind of like diving into, there's like a police officer who's talking to him, and there's a couple of hints as to certain encounters that they may have had in the past when he was a child and things like that. And there is that kind of like uncomfortableness where you're almost like feeling sorry, like you're feeling sorry for him, even though you kind of think that he's absolutely loopy, but you kind of understand why he's absolutely loopy. And I think it was important, but you do kind of feel a bit like slightly uncomfortable when you're watching it, but that's intentional. It's not like, it's not, you just feel uncomfortable because they're doing it wrong. It's like you're supposed to feel uncomfortable in this moment.
Is he saying something about the state of America? Conspiracy theorists? He could
be.
People?
He could be, for sure. I don't know whether he'll actually ever come out and admit it one way or the other, but I can definitely see how people can draw comparisons to that.
Yeah.
With the way that the movie ends, he may say, no, I'm not. But you never know.
Yeah. Is this a movie or is it going to be on Netflix in a week?
This is a movie. Actually, both of our movies this week are in cinemas now. So if you're looking for something that's not necessarily like a traditional Halloween horror film, if you're looking for something that's just a little bit more on like the weird alternative kind of spectrum, this is the film to see this weekend.
Okay. Yeah, no, actually, it sounds good. Somebody wants to know on the subject of Roisin Curley, any chance that the underachieving Mayo winemaking pharmaceutical czar could coach their county football team? You might even have a cure for the curse.
I love it.
That could be the next thing she could
do. I don't
know
if she has the time, but I'm sure she'd win if she was.
Somebody else wonders, on that champion Irish dancer who's a master of wine, has she a traditional Irish method of crushing the grapes? That would be good if she could do that.
That would be a traditional, I get it. That would be really funny.
That would be really funny.
That would make good content.
It would.
TikTok, here we come.
So, Only Murders in the Building is going to be in London.
Yeah.
Have they said what the building is? Then?
No, so this is hilarious. There's been all this excitement because Only Murders in the Building, if you've been waiting to binge, you can actually watch the whole season now because season 5 has just ended. And at the end of season 5, they came out and said, we've been renewed for season 6. They've probably thought, again, this hasn't been confirmed, but I'm trying to think of what the thinking was. Maybe they've thought, how many more murders can actually happen in this building? And I don't think they could take it to another place in New York. So why don't they go somewhere completely different? They're taking it to London.
Okay.
So that's all we know. We don't know anything else about it. But Selena Gomez did post on Instagram on Tuesday just saying, it looks like our family is going to London, y'all. And they're all excited. And the reason why this show keeps getting made is because there's a big fan base behind it. And you know, it is up and down, I think. Not all the seasons are fantastic, but they're able to get the massive names. So I love with it coming to London, what are the names they're going to get in London?
Yes, good point.
Yeah.
And well, I suppose that's the next thing now. They just tour these shows around.
Exactly.
To different places.
Judi Dench. Could you imagine Judi Dench?
Oh, yeah. This has to happen.
And Celia Imrie from The Traitors. And yeah, that'd be
her.
Because this is... elegant. Yeah. But this is the great thing about Only Murders in the Building is it's giving... Not that Judi Dench and Celia Imrie need a second life, but you do get to see older actors in a way that television shows don't necessarily place them. So,
yeah.
And it's not just a, we're going to have you just for the sake of having you. They've got really great, meaty, funny parts. So, yeah, we don't know when it's coming, what they're doing, but it's going to London.
Okay, good. And The Spot, tell us about that.
Again, we're not finding out a lot about these things, but what we do know is that Claire Danes is coming back to TV and she's joining Ewan McGregor in a TV show called The Spot. Kate Winslet was originally attached to this, but she dropped out due to creative reasons. And the reason why this show was picked up was because Kate Winslet said she was attached to it as well. So, but look, being replaced with Claire Danes is huge. She was massive in Homeland. She's a great actress. All we know about the premise is that it follows a suspect. It follows a successful surgeon who's played by Claire Danes and her school teacher husband, played by Ewan McGregor, who begin to suspect that she might be responsible for a child's hit and run death. Their quest for truth spirals into a web of mounting suspicion and dark secrets, testing their resolve and their relationship as they confront the possibility of hidden guilt and betrayal. So that's all we know. We don't know when it's coming. Filming hasn't started, but that could be an exciting new show.
Okay, and it's going to be where?
Hulu have picked it up, and for us that means hopefully Disney Plus.
Okay, right. Okay,
hopefully.
that means Disney Plus. All right. Okay, but that's where a bit like Only Murders in the Building.
We don't know anything.
Next year at the earliest.
At the earliest.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but look, that's some exciting new shows coming out, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Right. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. There's not the inconsiderable matter of having to give 262 grand to somebody. We'll do that after the break. So congratulations to Claire Incavan. Yes, you can insert your own punchline there. And as you heard there, she is looking for investment opportunities, or perhaps not. Anyway, congratulations to her. Kira will have a new total in the cash machine on the hard shoulder. Right, so let's toast Claire's good fortune.
Yeah, cheers.
She can afford a few bottles of this, I would imagine.
Yeah, she could probably buy a few barrels.
Yeah.
Come on, Claire.
Yeah.
Okay, so what we're having is Roisin Curly's Flurry. So Flurry is not your typical Burgundy. Most people, when they think of red Burgundy, they think of Pinot Noir. And we had tried it not so long ago on the show. And Pinot Noir as a grape is like kind of light, kind of savory, very tart.
Yeah.
Flurry is part of the region, the southernmost part of the Burgundy region, which is Beaujolais. So Beaujolais is a huge region. And within Beaujolais, there are 13 top villages, and Fleury is one of the top villages. And Fleury, for all those Francophiles, translates as flowers. And so Fleury typically, as one of the top Beaujolais, is one that is associated with perfumes and floral notes. And years ago, and probably even a little bit to this day, people would associate Beaujolais with Beaujolais Nouveau, that kind of like tacky excuse to pop it open in late November. Not very much depth, a fruit punch, and just really like a gimmick. But in actual fact, what's happened in Beaujolais over the last 15 years is this really, really, really cool movement for good winemaking, no added sulfur, letting each area sing. And so actually, Fleury and Beaujolais now, for me, are definitely some of those wines that if you're into them, try them again. Don't be thinking of that kind of tacky, flowery label that you would see in the supermarket in late November. And so specifically, this Flurry is from a field called Les Morières. So it's like one of the pieces of land within Flurry that is associated with a very high quality Beaujolais. And it straddles Moulin-Avant and another one that I can't remember, not Moulin Rouge. And it is just known for having a little bit more depth. And you can see when you taste this Flurry, I think both of them have the same, both the red and the white. The juiciness is outrageous.
Yes, yeah.
The length of the flavour in your mouth is nearly incomparable to anything that we would have done on the show in a long time.
Mm.
It just sits there and gives and gives and gives. And it's juicy blackberry, cassis, a little bit of red fruit, but ultimately very dark. Isn't it more like a brambly flavour than a strawberry flavour?
It's the exact word I was looking for earlier when I was just like, it's very... fruity.
Leslie, you're finding
fruits. One of them fruits. Yeah.
So look, you get this beautiful kind of black fruit flavour from this. It's got loads of depth. And years ago, Flurry was something that you drank it within 12 months of whatever the vintage on the label was.
Yeah.
Whereas now, Flurry is something that you can age and let it evolve. This is 2023. It's the new release. So like this okay. is, so it's, and you can see that it's got loads of time. Can I just say, I can still taste that in my mouth. It's just absolutely divine. So yeah, just a really, really cool wine. When we were saying that there were 5 barrels of the Bourgogne Allegati produced, 7.5 barrels only of this wine produced.
My
The production is so tiny. And just to reiterate, it really is this amazing labour of love. And if you're not going to a Michelin star restaurant in the next while, which is where most of the time you're going to be able to get these, good independent wine shops are going to have them around the country, and you can buy them on our web shop as well. And I have details on my Instagram, Michelle Oller Wine, if anyone wants to see what do the labels look like, what's the name, in case you don't understand my bad pronunciation.
Yeah, but on the label, it says, does it just say Roisin or Roisin Curly?
It says Roisin Curly.
Yeah, okay,
gorgeous.
So people can look for that, I suppose.
Yeah, you can Google Roisin Curly. Yeah, yeah. It's really easy. And look, if you Google Roisin Curly, you don't get the pharmacy. You just get the wine.
Yeah, okay.
Rest assured, you're just going to be getting the
wine. I love the way you say, this is from a field. We know what field this wine came from. That's
no, but that's amazing. But I tell you what's extraordinary about it is, not only because it's Roisin's wine, is it this field. Do you ever see, when you look at a vineyard in a picture, or if you're driving by, if you happen to be in wine country, every single one of those lines, those, they all have a number. So these would be like rows, Le Maurier field, rows 6 to 12. Like, it's that precise exactly. Yeah. Because you're tasting, and you don't, I don't say this often, but with these wines, you are tasting a tiny parcel of land in this tiny moment in time, and you capture it. It's just amazing.
Yeah. But say, with the rose that Roisin Curly has, tastes the same as the rose beside it, or the person who has taken those grapes?
Depends on the wine making, because I would say that Roisin has a very delicate approach where she really wants to let, they're not made, they're nearly, I know this is going to sound so wine knobby, they come out nearly. Like, she lets the grapes.
You're not wrong there. Yeah.
But they're allowed.
I don't want to drink it now, it comes out.
She allows the grapes to do what Mother Nature gave them in that year. And that's why they're so special. She might make this next year. She doesn't make every wine every year.
Yeah.
She makes based on, does it have what I'm looking for out of that wine? And it's really interesting, because you might find, and it's very commonplace, in specifically in Burgundy, because it's so fragmented. And because the land is so expensive, the grapes are so rare, they're sold by row, nearly, you know.
Oh, wow.
And one person's, Sean's row might taste totally different to Serena's. I'm going to say Serena's will be nicer.
Yeah. Almost certainly. Mine will be slightly bitter.
Hold on. Are you saying that any of us could go in and buy a row of grapes?
Now you're going to need.
Yeah. If it was me, I'd just eat the grapes. I go, oh, yeah.
You're going to need more than that 262 that Claire just won. 1,000. It's very oh my God. I don't have any facts or figures on how expensive it is. Maybe someone listening does. It is astronomically in the millions per square meter.
Oh, because my uncles, I remember being young, and us literally, I remember stomping in the grapes. They would go and buy cases of grapes, and they would make their own homemade wine.
Love it. In Australia?
In Australia. Yeah,
where in Australia?
Italian,
in Brussels?
The Italian and Greek. No, the Italian and Greek uncles would go down to the fruit shop and ask for their best grapes, and then go and make homemade wine. And sometimes I remember actually literally being in this little barrel. We'd have to wash our feet and we'd be stomping on the grapes.
Amazing.
But the wine wasn't as good as this.
Yeah, I imagine not. Well, it tastes as a feast probably. Billie Eilish, though, could afford one of these.
I love this woman. Like, when you think you can't love her anymore, she was at the WSJ, so the Wall Street Journal magazine, gave her an award. She got an innovator award. And when she got up to accept it, there were billionaires in the crowd, and she called them out, and she just basically turned around and said, we're in a time right now where the world's really, really bad and dark, and we need empathy, especially in our country. And I'd say, if you have money, it'd be good if you actually used it and did good with it. But then she actually went one step further, because this is Billie Eilish, and she said, I love you all, but there's a few people in here that have a lot more money than me. And if you're a billionaire, why are you a billionaire? No hate, but yeah, give your money away, shorties. And in that room was Mark Zuckerberg, who is the third most richest man in the room. And apparently, according to People magazine, allegedly, he did not clap when the rest of the room clapped.
Oh, did he not? Oh,
no, I wonder
Mark.
Why. But then
yeah.
At the back of that, Stephen Colbert came out, who was hosting, and he actually said that while Billy was on tour, she actually gave $11.5 million to food banks.
Amazing.
And so she's not just calling people out. She's turning around and going, yeah, it's great. We have this money. We worked hard for this money. They deserve to enjoy their money. But she's right. There should not be any billionaires in the world. They should be actually giving it away and helping people. So I think that's brilliant.
Okay, thank you, German Mao, for that one. Now, it raises the question, just how much money did she make on the tour that she could give away 11 million?
Yep.
Taylor Swift did it for every stop she had. She gave a lot of money to food banks in every single city.
And major like bonuses to her team as well. Like the truck drivers were getting like 5,000 or 100,000. Like there was like a lot of money that she was like, no, here, everybody gets to benefit from
it. And she still bought her back catalogue back.
She did.
What a lady.
Exactly.
So how much money did she make?
Millions.
Gazillions, I would have thought. Right, let's move on to our second movie of the day. It is The Black Phone 2. Here's a clip.
Hello, Finny.
What do you want?
It took me a long time, but now I remember.
You're dead.
Years. There you go. That's a dodgy phone line there. Sorry, we were just yakking. Didn't really listen to us.
It's okay. I know what was happening.
Okay, you better tell us what happened then, Olivia.
So, yes, we are back in the world of the black phone. So in the first one, the Grabber, that is our main villain. He had kidnapped Finny when he was only 14 years old and had basically Finny managed to escape. And this is kind of how his life has changed and how he's kind of dragged back into the world of the Grabber. It has a little bit of kind of like a Nightmare on Elm Street kind of vibe. And he has, when he was down in the basement, when he was being captive, there was this phone on the wall where he could hear it ring and he was answering it. And it was all of the Grabber's previous victims that he was hearing from. And they were the ones that were kind of giving him pointers as to how he could escape and escape the clutches of the Grabber.
Wow. Okay.
And this is something that has actually stayed with him as he's gotten older. So we're 4 years later and he is still like, he'd walk by a payphone that's like out of service and he will hear it ringing and he'll just pick it up and go, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And hang it back up. So he's clearly got like post-traumatic stress disorder. He hasn't really gotten over what had happened to him. He's trying to like block everything out by just smoking weed and not really dealing with the issues that of the trauma of what he has experienced. His sister Gwen has now started getting these dreams where she's not really sure how it's connected to everything, but she is seeing how these young boys had been murdered at this Christian away camp kind of thing, and they decide that they're going to go and investigate what's going on up there because it turns out that their mother, before she died, had actually been a counselor up there at the camp. So they think that that's why there's this, that's connection, and they're like, we want to know what happened to our mother, so we're going to actually go up here and investigate these murders. And of course it's actually connected to the Grabber.
Yeah, okay. Is it kind of a jump scare movie? Is it a slow feeling of threat movie?
Both. So there are some jump scares where suddenly the camera will pan around and there is a guy with an axe in his head standing right behind her, or there's actually
You've ruined that one now.
I didn't say when. But some of the most actually eye-catching sequences for myself were in this phone booth that's at the camp and Finny is answering the phone and we just heard a little bit of it there with him speaking to the ghost of the Grabber. And as the camera sort of pans and Finny turns his head, the Grabber's ghost is actually standing right behind him. But Finny doesn't see him because he isn't connected to things that way.
Mm.
And it's actually all done in like a one take. And so there's all of these movements and things. And like those, like as much as they look quite simple on screen and just really simple and effective, they're actually really complicated to choreograph. So I really appreciated how most of those kind of scenes there's at least two or three of them in the film, and they were all executed like really, really brilliantly. So just from like an artistic point of view, I really liked it.
But the one or that's so hot right now, everyone has to do one.
Yeah, at least one or two, you know, especially after like, so Boiling Point was the film with Stephen Graham, and then that team went and made Adolescence for Netflix as well. So yeah, like the Warner is, but like the Warner has always been around. Like there was the one for, was it Spectre or Skyfall? One of them with the opening sequence for... I think there was actually a few hidden cuts in there, but the majority of it was like a very long one-er.
Birdcage? Not, but it's not called, what was
the one? Oh, Birdman.
Birdman. Birdcage is a completely different film.
Very Ken.
Right, okay. So is it better than the first one?
I'd actually say it's kind of on par because they're both different enough, but also similar enough that they are definitely still part of the same universe, but they kind of can stand on their own two feet as well. I really enjoyed it. And Gwen has some absolutely brilliant one-liners that I can't repeat on air because they're filth, but you will actually be howling in your seat whenever she's really given someone like the business.
Okay. Brilliant stuff. Right. So that's a lot pretty much for today and this week. Thanks to Serena Bellissimo, Michelle Lawler and Olivia Fahey.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.